This is Reality Proves Possibility, an exploration of human ingenuity. Welcome. I'm Michael Pearson, and this is Reality Proves Possibility. We can do better than this. And I'm honored to be here with Patrick Struby, who is a globally famed social entrepreneur, the founder of Fairtrasa, and who has been an Ashoka Fellow, a Schwab Fellow, all the kind of accolades that you can get from institutions that are significant in this world of social enterprise. So thank you, Patrick, for being here.
Thank you, Michael, for inviting me.
That you're also an amazing,
it's a pleasure. Friend,
that you're an amazing friend. And I'm just pleased that we have this time for a conversation. So I want to start, as I start most of the conversations, just getting your reactions to the title of the show, which is Reality Proves Possibility. And then the subtitle is We Can Do Better Than This. This in capital letters. What do you think?
I mean, I like the title. And when I think about the title and when I look at my life, when I look back, I think what reality has proven in my life has gone beyond my wildest dreams. So from that perspective, I absolutely agree with your title.
Yeah. So you did basically surpass your own dreams, et cetera. Maybe you want to give others just a little bit of a glimpse of your life. The high points, maybe the low points, the key points of your trajectory as becoming this globally famed social entrepreneur, Ashoka Fellow, Schwab Fellow, Skoll Fellow, whatever fellow there may be in the field of social enterprise, and maybe just give people a little bit of a taste of your transition, your transformation, your contribution ultimately.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually a social entrepreneur by accident. When I became a social entrepreneur, I didn't even know that that existed. And a nutshell version how I became a social entrepreneur is that I had an epiphany. I had an epiphany when I was working for a very large commodity trading company back in Switzerland, where I'm from originally, where I was working on mergers and acquisitions. And that company owned a lot of mines and smelters around the globe. And at one occasion when I was in Peru, instead of going to the meeting room, you know, they said, we want to show you the mine. And in that occasion, you know, I was going high up into the Andes to an altitude where many people needed oxygen masks. And then we were going into the mountain. And what I saw when I was in the mountain, you know, like in the belly of the Andes, how people my age were working, under what conditions. And at the same time, the organization I was working for made a reorganization, and many of those miners lost their job. It's when I had the epiphany and realized with my job, I'm making the rich richer and the poor poorer. And, you know, having grown up in Switzerland, you know, I didn't even know what hardship meant. You know, you see this all through the what happens in the world through TV. But this was the moment when it became real. And that was a big epiphany, a wake up. And this is when I decided I need to change my life. So I went back to Switzerland. I quit my job. And I didn't know what I wanted, but I knew what I didn't want. And the problem at that time, I was in my late 20s. The problem at that time was my dad, you know, like a traditional Swiss father, as you can imagine. I couldn't believe how I would give up a job where I make like double that than all my peers without having even another job. You know, that was a problem. So I realized I cannot stay in Switzerland. He would drive me nuts, literally. So I decided to do a sabbatical, and I wanted to do that in a country I've never been to. So I picked Mexico because I had this epiphany in Peru, and I wanted to go back to Latin America. I felt a pull to Latin America. And so I just went on this sabbatical to Mexico. And so on. What happened literally was I was just traveling through Mexico, you know, trying to find out what to do with my life. And when I traveled through the countryside, I saw these smallholder farmers who had these beautiful orchards, beautiful avocados, who were selling these fruits to middlemen middlemen and local markets at ridiculously low prices. And if I walk into Whole Foods, I have to pay $2.50 for an avocado. And then I just thought, what's wrong here? How can it be that these farmers live in poverty or near poverty, and I have to pay $2.50? And the outcome of that insight was that I started an organization to actually lift smallholder farmers out of poverty. So my sabbatical turned into a project where I just wanted to do something meaningful, like an internship, you know, at when you're a university student. But what I did is I was intrigued by the fair trade model. This was the time when fair trade became popular. And so I was learning about fair trade, what they were doing. And then what I did in that quote unquote internship is I built a cooperative. I certified them with fair trade. And when my sabbatical came to a close, I was the first one globally with organic and fair trade avocados. And at that time, the question then was, okay, what do I do now? Because it was never my plan to actually, you know, build a social business. The purpose of my trip was to find out what to do with my life. And then is when I had to, you know, decide, do I go back to big corporate Switzerland? And I was in negotiation with a even better position than I had, or do I continue living my dream? And you know, as well as I do, I stayed 8 years in Mexico and I built an organization that then has, from Mexico, has replicated or it scaled all across Latin America. And today we are one of the largest organic and fair trade organizations, vertically integrated organizations to help lift smallholder farmers out of poverty. That's the nutshell.
That's a nutshell, an avocado shell. That's a quite fascinating story, because maybe you can share a little bit more about how you were raised, what you were doing, what were sort of your traditional ambitions, because that epiphany, that's really sort of a total transformation, right? And I think sometimes when we're looking at how do we create a world where flourishing for everyone is possible, it does require many of those epiphanies. But from an educator perspective, that's kind of a very difficult task, right? That almost requires divine intervention. So difficult to generate that, but maybe you can give us a little bit of an insight. What happened? How were you setting yourself up? What was sort of giving rise to that possibility for you to actually receive that
episode? You know, that's a very good question. I mean, I think a lot of that I owe to my parents, you know, the way I was brought up. Both of my parents were Catholics. I was raised Catholic. We used to go every Sunday, you know, to church. You know, it was very, you know, here, this is what you should do, what you should not do. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, this was the time and all the other friends, they got these skateboards. And my dad said, you know, you have to work. You have to work if you want your skateboard, you know. When all the friends, they just got it, I had always, you know, there was no such thing as a free lunch. And this was the way I was brought up. So, well, like with values, you know, very, 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 very deep values. And somehow they really became part of me. And I think this was the reason when I saw these smallholder farmers that I felt this injustice. How can it be that these farmers have such great product? And there are opportunities out there, but they don't know because they live in the middle of nowhere. They don't know that Whole Foods exists. They don't know that these markets exist. And I saw that with my background and the experience in trading, that I actually could help them to be the bridge, that they can get access to a new opportunity that can literally transform their lives. And that's what we've done. A couple of thousand of times. And that for me has been the biggest satisfaction.
That's fantastic. So you basically reference faith, a faith tradition, a tradition of social justice potentially, but also the tradition that maybe is more, let's say, Protestant, Calvinist, self-reliant work as like you got to earn your right. Right. And then combining that, if I hear this correctly, and maybe you want to respond to this, combining that as a way to address the bigger issues was giving you a pathway to experience yourself as satisfied. Or
I think there are two components here. One is, what were the values that got instilled in me? But then the mindset my dad had was a very narrow-minded mindset, very black and white. you know, this is like the way Swiss people, Swiss Catholic look at life. You know, you have to be good at school, you have to get a good job, you have to get a house, you have to get a nice car, you know, and this is it. And that is happiness. Mm-hmm. If you tick all these boxes, that's what will result in happiness. And I tell you, I had all of this and I was miserable. And the reason I think I could do this, the reason I could go and just go and do this sabbatical was because while from the outside I had everything, from the inside, I felt the only way is up. The only way is up. Mm-hmm. And I think a key component, that's why I said there are two parts of it, is I literally decided when I left Switzerland with everything I did against the will of my parents.
Mm.
Because normally, you know, then you're so under the influence of your parents that whatever your parents do, that's what you follow. I did not. And this was hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Especially
because now it sounds very easy when I tell you what I've built.
Right.
There were many moments of deep doubts when I thought, maybe my dad was right after all, that I'm crazy to drop a job like this.
Mm.
What I did have, what you mentioned, I had that faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, I started something that did not exist mm-hmm. at all. And many people told me, it's such a crazy idea. Now, how would you want to start an organization in a foreign country, in a foreign language, in a foreign culture, in a foreign sector, when everything is foreign to you? How do you want to do that? Start a business in your country. This is not easy. But in my mind, I never had a doubt that it would not work. So I had that absolute conviction, and that conviction that kept me going, no matter what, if you fall down, you get up, you brush yourself off.
So, I mean, that's powerful. And I'm curious, because do you think this was something that you were born with? That's sort of the basic theory that people have. Somebody is just made for this. Or were you able to develop yourself into this? Where did the conviction come? Because you were starting out very traditionally in trading and consulting and trading and sort of business as quote unquote usual. And then took on with such conviction as you're sharing that shift towards something that was really unusual at the time. There were no peers. I remember looking out for people doing something that you were describing, right? And I saw some people, but it was by no means anything that was even close to being talked about in traditional circles or conversations, right? So you would actually, as you said, choose loneliness, choose trouble.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I
know when you're born and you go through school and you have your job, nobody tells you exactly this is your skill. You have to actually find out. Life teaches you. So I know that I've always been a visionary. I've always been sort of a big thinker. But the skills I developed, I don't think I was born with them. While I had the vision, I think the skills I developed really while I was developing my project. Mm. But because I had such a clear idea of what the final outcome was, nothing that came in my way would stop me. I took it always as a training. And I think one of the key, you know, I was reflecting a lot, what is actually one of my key skills? And I think I'm a very good observer. The skill of observation is very, very important. And when I still was working for this other company, I remember I had two bosses. One was a great boss and one was a very terrible boss. But I was learning from both, or even from circumstances that happened to others. What is if that would happen to me? So really, it's like a very deep observation where you really read between the lines. And you have to do that when you're in a country and in a culture that is so different. So I think that skill of being able to really observe and adapt and combine it with the bigger vision, this is something that I really got trained. And so my trainer was my own company. You know, before you had bosses, but it was life itself, actually. You know, I would say it's life itself that has been my.
So what I'm hearing is you're saying the skills are developable. You develop them. But what I'm also curious about is, like, how do you think you got access to this conviction that you can do this? where maybe you've always carried that with you, or maybe it was, as you described, the epiphany that just came to you at some point, maybe around some other conditions where you felt like, yeah, you can do this or something. What do you think gave rise to that?
Very good question. I haven't really thought about that. So, but you know, when I look at my life, there have been a number of epiphanies. The big one was that shifted from that conventional job to becoming a social entrepreneur. But the other thing that then really sort of hit me hard was when I saw with my own eyes realities that were so different than mine. This was when I saw these smallholder farmers who lived in near poverty. This was the moment when it really landed, because I never in Europe saw anything even close to this. And I think because of that, I took it on to say, I really want to do something. I want to use my skills, whatever I've learned, to help these people. And I think that the depth of that insight and that conviction is what then helped me just overcome all these obstacles along the way. And this is very, very distinct from somebody who just starts a company, you know, with like objectives of, okay, I want to make a lot of money, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. Because that conviction came from the heart. It didn't come from the head. And I think because of that, I could just, it gave me the strength and the perseverance, you know, to just continue. And having a clear mind, having a very clear mind that no matter what, you know, this like no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also, what came out of that is a lot of creativity. I mean, the brands I built, the projects I built was like, when there was no money, you know, I mean, there were like so many moments when I just had no clue and things I've never done. But then you tap into a pool of creativity that I didn't know I had,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also a lot of these things, when I look back, I think they were a gift.
Mm-hmm.
They came to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I don't even claim ownership of everything I've done, you know, because I think a lot came through me.
Yeah. And I think that's where sort of I'm curious to see, because many people are talking about this now, like distinction of the inner development, the outer development, sustainable development goals, the inner development goals, the kind of integration, conflagration, or the convergence of you as a person being a vessel, a vehicle of that which exists already out there, but maybe needs to be tapped into, discovered or something. So there's a lot of, I think, new discoveries of ancient wisdom traditions that basically manifest exactly that. Can you speak to your own journey in terms of integrating what you saw out there, but also how you can tap into this pool of wisdom, maybe not as yours, but as something that exists for all of us, and you can be the translator, the vessel, the vehicle to make this happen. I don't know if that resonates with you, but what do you think?
I totally agree with what you're saying. You know, there cannot be peace out in the world if there isn't peace inside. You know, and in my case, you know, the personal and the spiritual development has been very fundamental, because this is, you know, and it has for me been a process of first shedding everything that wasn't me.
Mm.
And you know, in the book, I'm in the process of finalizing, you know, where I write about that is how I realized all those, you know, teachings from my teachers, my parents, you know, what came from them with the best intention, I had then to question and validate, is that actually me or is this not me? And then going and letting go, this is not me, this is not me, this is not me, this is also not me. And then you come to a place that is a new place. Suddenly you stand at a different place where you basically have to rediscover yourself and you have to find new ground where you can build on. But that is a much better foundation to stand on, because that is not tainted or influenced by people who may think they know better what is best for your life. I literally had to find it myself, and the hard way, you know, the hard way. I mean, out there in the middle of nowhere, you know, I had many nights of nightmares, mm-hmm. and I woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning thinking, am I really crazy? Did I throw away a life just because I have some crazy idea? There were so many moments, but also, and I remember one specific moment when I had that, you may have experienced it also, you wake up drenched in sweat, and then you go like, mm-hmm. But then in that moment, when that happened, I realized this other voice came and said, no, you know,
mm-hmm.
there is something more important for you to do. And then it's like the curtain fell. I remember I was like, it's like the curtain fell and it was clear. I took the right decision. And the next morning, literally the next morning, I met then the person who introduced me to the people for the Mexico project.
Mm-hmm.
It was so many times. It was like, you know, you get to a point where you, can you hold that pressure?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, but then, you know, and it came from inside. It is not the intellect because it's beyond the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
But this is when you're connected to the core of who you are. And once you get connected to that, from that is where the creativity comes. From that is where perseverance comes. From that is where you can be with other people in a very human, equal way. No matter where you come from, what your name is. And I was sitting on the floor with so many farmers, and there were farmers that brought me to tears. They could hardly read or write because they happened to be born in the middle of nowhere. But I could see the sparkle in their eyes and that they wanted to do something. And for me, the being able to give them an opportunity to do something for themselves and for the community, I tell you, it's the biggest. It gives you goosebumps
when you actually can do this.
And this is then when I feel just being placed in a position where you can do this, it's a gift. It's a gift.
Yeah, and I think that all the research now is sort of catching up with that insight that actually people, when they give rather than when they take, are feeling accomplished, are feeling fulfilled, are feeling
satisfied,
happy, right? You're talking about the happiness model of Switzerland, getting stuff, house, car, family, etc. I think not that these things are unimportant, but the bigger piece of contribution in a meaningful way is what gives goosebumps reliably, right? And where you can actually honor the dignity of yourself and others and then contribute in a meaningful way to people's flourishing, including your own. It's not like this narrative of victimhood and sacrifice that many people have embraced throughout, where it's like, yes, if you want to do something good, you're going to do something bad to yourself. You're going to suffer. But in the end, it's when we're like, there's a whole different pathway towards quote unquote success, right?
Absolutely. You know, and it starts in here, you know, it doesn't start out there. But in this, you know, especially, you know, having been raised Catholic, you know, where there's so much guilt, you know, I remember, for example, my parents used to tell me, you're stealing God's time if you're not productive. So imagine me being in Mexico, not having a job, not having income, sitting around. I was learning to play the violin, you know, I was meditating, I was doing all of this. But then what creeped in is like that voice of my dad here saying, you're stealing God's time. Yeah. And letting go of this, I tell you, it is not an easy thing. You know, and there's so many voices in our heads, they're not ours. And being able to distinguish those voices is critical. Mm-hmm. It's critical to actually come to that place who you truly are. Very critical.
Yeah. I mean, that's so resonant with so many, I mean, of my own experiences. I think with everybody that has had a deeper sort of questioning of their own contribution, purpose in life. And you see that is probably a fundamental truth for life in general, that you want to sort of experience yourself as part of and a contributor to the bigger logic of life unfolding towards a meaningful form of flourishing. And I don't know, there are different ways of framing that that the world religions have embraced, but I think they may also be stepping stones of narratives that may be adaptive to what you're saying, right? Like they're sort of building blocks of Catholic faith that can be helpful. Others may actually not be helpful. How can you sort of drop some of that and discover truth, veritas, God, the universal insights, whatever you may call it? So it sounds to me like there is this deeper spiritual component in your quest that actually also maybe allows you a little bit to think more broadly, because right now you're about to potentially close a chapter on this part of your life, if I may frame it that way. You're writing a book or potentially sort of stepping into different roles, different levels, and different forms. Can you speak to that? What do you see? What else do you see as possible out of that experience that you have described?
So, you know, when I started my organization, you know, just speaking to what you were mentioning earlier, you know, for me, all that transformation, and it was a transformation, was really a bottom-up transformation. You know, when you say, you know, there are people who go on that quest too, you know, I just knew what I didn't want, you know, but I wasn't looking for a job. There was nothing, you know. The only thing was I wanted to understand what should I do with my life. So it was a bottom up. It was bottom up learning, you know. I was like thrown into a situation, and then all these things came up without. I never thought about all of this. I dealt with it as it came. But because I was in this foreign country, in this foreign culture, eventually became also mine, because I really adapted. But I think it was a very fertile ground. So I don't think if I would have stayed in Switzerland, I would have gone through the same transformation, because it was such an opposite. It was such a big contrast. And I really felt I was like thrown into water, and then I started to learn to swim. So this is why all of this was really, I went through that, you know. This was the process. And that's why, and it has been a very transformative process. And with regards to your second question, where am I now? So I built an organization. We celebrated 20 years last year. And as I have been exposed to so many other social entrepreneurs, so many, I see that with everything I learned, I really feel I want to contribute to this larger, to other sectors. You know, what I always had when I was in Mexico, I remember when I was working with these farmers, I always felt like, on one hand, I have all these skills that I was being given, you know, given a lot was luck. I happened to be born in Switzerland, you know, that you could, the education, the talents, this and that. But then I also realized that on the other side, whatever that column is, you have this other column that is like responsibility. And for me, at that point, I realized I've been given so much, and the responsibility I have in life is to live up to how much I've been given, and way beyond. And this has stayed with me when I built the organization. And this is also what drives me now, you know, because I think there is so much experience that I have gained, both in the social entrepreneurship world, but also beyond that. And this is why the next phase is, how do I pass that on? How do we foster a world that is more human? What does humanistic leadership really look like? I mean, the model I have built was one that is based on that premise, but in a small sector. What does it take to really bring this to the entire business sector? What would it take? And because I think I've gone through that, and it is part of me. You know, this is not an intellectual understanding for me. This is who I am. And because I know what it does and how it feels and the satisfaction it can give one when one can be such a contribution, you know, I think if we can spread this, the world will be a different place. Mm-hmm. The world will be a different place. And so, and I don't know exactly what it will look like, but I just feel that I want to continue, you know, sharing and contributing from that space. And this is also the reason I wrote the book. And the book, the title is Unlock the Changemaker in You, because I know that everybody can be a changemaker. Everybody has it in him or in her. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be unlocked. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of my book is that through my story, through my experience, that we can unlock that change maker for a better world in millions of people. And this is sort of how I feel is one of my responsibility to continue sharing what I learned over 20 years building my organization.
Great. So basically it's like 2.0, 3.0 Patrick doing the same thing, not necessarily clear yet, but exploring almost like you were doing, going to Mexico, sampling where and how can you make difference, positive difference at a higher level. Is that accurate?
This is accurate. And what I would add to this, you know, 20 years ago, I was like thrown into this, you know, and then every time something got really difficult or dangerous, something opened up. And when I look back, I see like how I have been guided in a way, you know, it's like a visible hand that has been guiding Patrick in this. And because it has been so often, I have this absolute trust that I am guided to do exactly what I need to do next in life. And that is something very beautiful because this is what my life has shown me.
Yeah.
I don't need to think too hard about that. If you have a pure intention, a really pure intention, life will work through you.
That's a powerful, we can almost stop here, but this is like really, like, I think that is something, I don't know how this insight can be shared in a book or through education or be accessible at scale. But I know that if that was something that is more central to the conversations that we have for education or for what it means to be successful, I think it could shift quite a bit. Now, we've started working together on the Humanistic Leadership Academy using education. Before that, we've got connected basically through the work on Ashoka, the Ashoka Changemaker Campus idea, et cetera, and transforming universities and higher education to be and allow and enable change making at scale. I'm not sure how successful we were ultimately because many of those initiatives are getting absorbed in very traditional, stale kind of ways. And I actually have sort of a tendency to look at this. It's like there is massive failure at the system level. It does require complete interruption at different levels. What is your take? What is your take on that? And where do you see the power, the potential of transformation at scale for the kind of things that you're describing?
Yeah. So, you know, transformation is a process. You know, it's not something that happens, you know, in a moment. You know, you can have an epiphany, but then, you know, it will take time. And it has been a transformation of 20 years that when I look back, the Patrick I was and the Patrick I am now is a very different Patrick. And if we want to transform, and I was thinking a lot about how can we, you know, scale, you know, I was looking at how can I scale my impact model for farmers, you know, that what we learned in Latin America, how can we bring it to India and to other places? And what I have learned so far is, you know, we convey more with who we are than with what we say. So this is why I believe it needs to be a combination, you know, because you cannot teach humanistic management like you teach math, because humanistic management is not something that is only a realm of the intellect. Humanistic management is the combination between the head and the heart. And there is something that needs to spark in the other person. And the minute that sparks, something starts to kick in that gives you, that expands you and gives you an understanding of a deeper meaning that, that business success or commercial or any of this economic cannot do. It does not even get into that on that level. But this is once that is sparked in the person, you know, that journey starts. And this is what I'm trying to do because I know how that feels. You know, I know how that feels. And this is like when I see a good movie, I call and say, Michael, you have to go and see that movie. It's such a good movie. And now because I know that that is so important for leaders today and the next and the future generations, especially in the world like we live in right now. That's why the only thing I want to share that. And this is why finding a way that transmits that, you know, is a combination between, yes, there are practices, you know, I'm also talking in my book about that, you know, there is mindset, there is values, there is skills, but then very practically, how do you actually go about that? So my book is really about, what my book is really about is for anybody who feels there is more in me. Mm. If anybody thinks there is more in me, you know, my book focuses on the gap between the life you're living and the life you're supposed to live.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's what it actually does. And it is a combination between that inspiration, that element, but also, okay, very concretely, okay, so what is it that you have to do? So I think that is the combination. It cannot be on the philosophical level.
Mm.
But something needs to be sparked, and it needs to go beyond the intellect. That is very important.
So I would love to have that conversation as we go and continue exploring what and how you can create that sort of awareness, consciousness, and use that spark for the transformation. Because I think that's the beauty of this moment. People aren't going to be sparked. I mean, they're forced to have sparks. Right, by the way that the dysfunctions are becoming so acute.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is now. This is why I feel, you know, that's why I want to transition, because I feel there's an urgency.
Mm-hmm.
If I look and switch on the TV, or if I look at the news, you know, there is an urgency. You know, we need more transformed human beings who understand what humanistic management and leadership really is.
And there's a reality that proves the possibility. Like, you have lived it. Yeah. Other people have lived it.
Exactly.
Many people have lived it. It's not like something that's special to this time or special to some part of humanity. This is something that is accessible to all of us, right? But maybe it's hidden in.
But yeah. And this is why I'm saying unlock the change maker in you, because I know everyone has it.
Right.
Everyone has it.
Yeah. And I think it's the tragedy of education, higher education, education in general, that we're sort of moving people away and locking them in with more and more doors about the possibility of their own agency and making a meaningful contribution at large, right? So this is, I think, the biggest opportunity that maybe by virtue of the breakdowns that we're experiencing right now, we can really intentionally unlock. So I don't know if you have any final reflections on that before I'm giving you the last Marcel Proust question, but.
I just want to say the moment is now. There is so much negativity in the world, and there's so many people out there that want to be part of the solution. So I think it's now the moment to really, you know, offer this to the world and scale it. And this is what my life is about. So I'm excited. As difficult today's world is, mm-hmm. I'm excited to go and share.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I think also not only share, but to co-create and contribute in many ways, right?
Absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you, Patrick, so much. Now, give me a number from 1 to 35, and then I'm giving you Marcel Proust.
33.
Oh, you're cutting it. The edge. 1 second. Now I'm challenged by my Mac. Look, 33. There we go. What is your greatest regret?
What is my greatest regret? I actually don't have regrets. I actually don't have regrets, because although there were moments I would have told you, I regret this, that, and that, but now I see they were important lessons. Everything I would have told you these are regrets were teachers, were lessons.
So then maybe what was your greatest teacher?
My greatest teacher is life itself, and continues being life itself.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Patrick. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for your work. Thank you for really showcasing that reality proves possibility in so many ways, right? But no matter where you're from, no matter what the notion of success is, you can create lots more possibilities, and unlocking that change maker in you gives permission to others to do that at different levels. So I thank you for your friendship. I thank you for your work. I thank you for our collaboration, and thanks for being on this podcast.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure.
Take care. Ciao, ciao.